Okay, welcome everybody to the Parsha class, Chayasara 5771. We are well on our path to what we set out for this year, which is to discuss the Yesodos, or the basics. And we're finding out that the basics are not so basic. I mean, they're not so easy to grasp. They're foreign ideas and deep ideas, and yet they're basics nonetheless. Today, with God's help, I think we are possibly positioned to come up with what I, at my understanding as of this moment, is a very comprehensive and kind of all-inclusive definition or explanation for what it is that we are here for, which is why it's basic. I want to go very slowly, so please slow me down if I go too fast. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity that I have to teach this class, which has really given me the opportunity to clarify some of this. So I also ask your indulgence, unless you're slowing me down, to please hold the questions until the end. So just to recap what we have covered so far, we have established that there is God and there is man, two main characters in the world. We have established that God is hidden, but with the trigger of man's will, he can easily see that there is a God. With his will as a trigger. Without the will, he won't see it. With the will, he'll see it everywhere. And that's what we call emunah, faith. Faith not in the sense of, I don't really know it. Faith in the sense that, I do know it. I do know a whole lot because I want to. And I can discover it. Well, faith in God, or shall we say, I believe that there is a God, is only the beginning. Because if you believe that there is a God, what does that tell you about man? The way you look at man in a godless world is altogether different than you look at man in a God world. That's very, very significant. Don't just say, I believe in God. Tell me what implication that has for you. So, well, what do we know about that? Basics. Well, we know that man is supposed to do something in this world so that he can earn some type of reward in the world to come. So that says something about man. Man has something to do. Man has some work to do. And that was, in fact, God's purpose of creating man, so that man could have the opportunity to earn this reward. Because this is God's will. God being God, having no needs of his own, and having the basic midah of goodness, of bestowing, of giving pleasure, this is what he wants to do. He wants to give man this reward. So he placed man here in order to act and thereby earn this reward. Well, that's good. It's good that man believes this. It's good that man believes in God. It's good that man recognizes that he has something to do. And it's good that he has something good to look forward to motivate him. But we are taught by our sages that that's not really the highest level of motivation, where I'm here to do something good for myself, to do the things that will enable me to get rewarded. Even if it means reward in a spiritual sense, reward in the world to come. It's still not the highest level. You mean, I was placed here just so that I could get some good stuff? We are taught by our sages that that's not the highest level. That's not called serving God lishma, for its own sake. Or, to put it another way, we are taught that everything in the world is for God's glory, and that we're not here to serve God for the purpose of reward. We're here for God's glory. Well, that's where it starts to fall apart. Because, I mean, first you're telling me, go do all these things so that I can get rewarded. That's supposed to motivate me. And then you turn around and you say, well, that's not really why you're doing them. You're doing them for God. I just can't handle that. I just can't handle that double talk. So we had a little more. I'm still on review now. Last week, we learned that the two concepts are really connected. The truth is that God, his plan was to create a world where one day he will reveal himself. That's the plan. The plan is one day he will be Megala Yehudo. He will reveal his oneness. What's the catch? He still wants to bestow goodness to someone. So he created a creature called man and said, guess what, man? I am making you my partner. I am going to give you the opportunity to help me accomplish my ultimate goal, which is to reveal my oneness. Yes. Yes, you. Yes, you, man. You are going to help me reveal my oneness. No, you are solely going to help me reveal my oneness. I'm not even going to do it now. I'll do it later. Now, you're the one to reveal my oneness. Got it? So, you get busy revealing my oneness, proclaiming that Hashem Echad, that everything is God. And that will be the best thing in the world for you. By revealing how I am everything, you will receive the greatest pleasure that could possibly be imagined. But you have to reveal my oneness, right? You can't stand there and say, me, 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 because that's not revealing my oneness. So you have to reveal my oneness altruistically. And I'm telling you, that is the best thing that you could do for yourself. It's still a little hard to hear. Okay, so if that's the case, then I guess if I were asked to do that, then if I had total faith, I would probably get up on a soapbox and proclaim God's oneness to the world. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. I'll do that all day long, from morning till night. And any time somebody comes over to me and says, hey, why don't you do something different with yourself? I'm going to say, no, 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 no. My job is to reveal the oneness. I'm not important. Why don't you have something to eat? You look a little hungry. No, no, no. It's not about me. I'm here to reveal God's oneness. I don't know. I mean, that's what it sounds like. If you want me to reveal God's oneness, I should just nullify myself. But is that what God asked us to do? Didn't he ask us to do things for ourselves? Didn't he ask us to develop ourselves? Didn't he ask us to make good choices? Didn't he ask us to build? Didn't he ask us to build up the world? If we can, have a family, bring new human beings into the world, build a society. Didn't he ask us to be productive? Well, how does that fit in to the revealing God's oneness? I understand the part that when I nullify my own wills and my own ideas and I promote God, I understand how that does it. I'm not really sure how being a productive person who's actually focusing on my own abilities and talents and capabilities and the thought of taking responsibility for something and the thought that I'm actually responsible, that I am actually being relied upon by others, I'm not really sure how that promotes the oneness of God. I understand how when I shun myself and nullify myself and proclaim that God is the one and only, I understand that intellectually, but I'm not sure I get the whole picture, how it all ties in to this single goal of revealing the oneness of God. So, this is where we stand at this moment. We've learned a little bit about God and a little bit about man, and we've tried to say that they're somehow connected, but not really get it to the point where I am comfortable that everything that I do in my life is really part of that mission. I thought this would be... Oh, let's just pause for a moment. Pause for station identification. How many people's brains are still working? No, really. I mean, I don't want to move on from this because I think that this is really, if you're trying to define basics, and I'm not saying it's easy. It is the foundation of what it is all about. I think we have to get this clear. I think we have to actually appreciate that there's a paradox going on. That really, man-God existence is a paradox of sorts. I want us to appreciate that. Because here we are promoting the oneness of God, and at the same time, we're not asked to nullify ourselves. So, which one is it? How can they both be joining the same goal? I thought, by the way, that Hayasara would be a good parsha to have this discussion because just some little thing told me that maybe there's a theme in the parsha has a lot to do with it, and that's called getting married. Something told me, some little inkling told me that maybe marriage has something to do with our ultimate purpose. Just because it's right here in the beginning of the Torah, it was even earlier on, when Adam and Eve, almost after the immediate creation, there was a marriage. And that marriage actually created a problem. But here we are again, we're after the flood, and God is still telling us to get married. He's still telling Avraham to go find a wife for Yitzchak. And that's still prominent there right in the Parsha. So something told me that that might have something to do with the ultimate purpose. And we're speaking now kind of conceptually. We're speaking about the philosophy of it. I'm not saying everybody needs to go out and get married now. That's not what this is about. This is not about what you should do at this moment. It's really not. If we understand what this is all about, we can accomplish it really even if we're not married. If we don't understand it, then marriage isn't going to help. So I hope you hear me where I'm coming from. What is the Torah teaching us about our ultimate purpose, and what does marriage have to do with it? So I think the rest of it is actually quite simple. I think we're past the hard part. Because what we've done is we've raised the paradox, but I think that the solution, the resolution, is quite simple, and I think it'll resonate with us immediately. And the truth is, we really know it. There's two main ways that we can be Megala HaYichud, that we can reveal the oneness of God. One is to nullify ourselves. Okay? And that is an important facet. And the other way is to reveal Him through ourselves. Remember, Aunt Joyce? Remember, we have a neshama? And where did our neshama come from? The breath of God? Yes. Remember that?
Yes.
Man was created with Tzelem Elokim. Man was created with godliness. God breathed a neshama into us. He implanted within us godly qualities. And in fact, He gave us a mitzvah. Besides all of the action mitzvahs in the Torah, isn't there a mitzvah that says, emulate God? Walk in His ways? Isn't that one of the mitzvahs? Say yes. So, hey, that's a different idea. Come on, the patriarchs, Avraham. Avraham revealed the Midah of Chesed. Was he not revealing God by acting in the ways of Chesed? Was he not revealing God by his own godliness? Was Yitzchak not revealing Din and the human devotion to God, and thereby revealing the strength and the absolute truth of God through his actions? Come on. Everything we know about God is through people. Until we came to Mount Sinai and God actually revealed the Torah directly. But up until that point, and even after Sinai, it continues to be revealed through the medium of his people, of his righteous ones. So that is a power that we have. We have a power to reveal God's oneness by revealing God's attributes through ourselves. It's even a mitzvah. It's even one of the commandments to do that, to emulate God. How are some of the ways we do that? I don't think there's one way. I think there's many ways. Certainly several ways. In mainstream Judaism, in mainstream practice of Yiddishkeit, that we reveal God's oneness through ourselves. When we study Torah, we develop godly wisdom. We acquire godly wisdom. We think like God because we're studying God's words. As we talk about it, we are revealing God, the oneness of God. We're revealing God through His teachings. If we do a mitzvah that's not really understood by man, it's a chok, it's a statute, it cannot be understood by man, and we say, God's wisdom is higher than ours, and even though we don't understand it, we do the mitzvah, we have revealed God that way. how about when I learn how to be someone who's in control of myself? How about if I struggle with certain temptations, certain inclinations, whether they be internal or whether they be from my environment, and I struggle with them, and very often I feel like I am just a victim. I act the way I act because I just can't help myself. Or I act the way I act because other people convince me to act that way. Which means I do things without very much control. I don't really act with choice, with thought, with wisdom. I'm like a victim. Is that godly? To act without forethought and will?
Of course not.
What? Of course not. What is it? What is it to act, to be in control, and to say, I'm not just going to do what my body tells me, or I'm not just going to do what my society tells me. I'm going to do what I decide I'm going to do. I'm going to take control, and I'm going to decide, and I'm going to carry out the right thing. Where did that come from, that ability to do that? God. Because that's what God is. God is the ultimate control, in control, only doing that which he decides should be done. That's the ultimate in godliness. Well, every time a human being does that, he is revealing the oneness of God. If he didn't act that way, then he would be revealing the frailty of man, the weakness of man. He would show how men can be reduced to animals. By deciding to be in control, by deciding to act on decision, on choice, he is creating a human being which has the Tzelem Elohim, the godly image, to be able to do that. So that's something that's not in any way, shape, or form a nullification of man. Au contraire, that is strength of man. That is development of man. That is control of man as a means of revealing the oneness of God. How about if man becomes like Abraham and he becomes a do-gooder, a giver, a Baal Chesed, a bestower of kindness to others? Is there anything more godly than that? Is there anything more revealing of God's primary midah, primary trait, which is to bestow goodness? When a human being bestows goodness, is there anything that's more essentially godly than that? No. Therefore, man reveals God's oneness by doing chesed, by being chesed. What else can man do that reveals the oneness of God? Maybe in the most powerful way, he can become a creator. He can become a creator of life. Only possible if God grants him. But he can be a partner in creation of life. Is there anything more godly than that? So, reframe everything. It's good. It's good. I can exist. Not only can I exist, I can challenge myself to grow, to use strength, to use commitment, to use human creativity, to be Megala, that everything in the world is just God. The ultimate paradox is now resolved. Because I am acting in a way that demonstrates that man is also created in God's image. The ultimate of man revealing the ultimate of God. Dick and Jane are now standing on the stage, arm in arm, and they are both the main characters of the play. to quote the analogy that we started off at the beginning of the year. The two main characters, man and God, are joined. Now, here's where marriage comes in. If we have a hard time getting our arms around the magnitude of the order here, being at the same time completely in control, completely manly, completely productive and responsible, and at the same time, in a way which is self-effacing, not calling attention to the me, but calling attention to the oneness of the other, or of the greater whole, that's marriage. That dynamic is what marriage is. That's what marriage was created for. It was created for to allow a microcosm of man and God in many different levels. Just on a mundane level, if a man wants to be married, he has to learn how to make himself not the issue. He has to learn how to give up the me for the we. It's not about me, it's about we. And if you have any question as to whether that's a good thing, you know, that's where we started off kind of rubbing me the wrong way. You're trying to get me motivated to do something in this world to get reward, and then you tell me it's not about me. Bleh. But isn't that marriage? Isn't marriage, if it would be done ideal, I'm not saying that every marriage is like this. Marriage can be the downfall as well as the ultimate. But is that not the case? If a person says, I'll give up the me, isn't it very possible that he'll get something even better? Giving up the me for the greater whole? Some people have a hard time getting over that hump. They feel like that to give up the me, I'm going to be reduced to a nobody. I'm going to be reduced to a shmata. It's because a lot of people have a hard time meshing these two concepts. You're giving up the me for something greater. You're going to be part of something greater. That's kind of what Gilui HaYichud is like in this world. If you stand up and accept that there's a Ribono Shel Olam, a God, and this is not all about you, you will end up being a part of that Gilui HaYichud. When Hashem reveals himself and everyone sees that there is none other but him, you're going to be sitting there and basking in that light, and I was part of that process when I gave myself up and I started to act not for me but for God. I am going to recognize myself. Bayom Hahu, and that day when Hashem will be one, I'm going to see myself in that oneness of God. Why? Because I participated in that process when I was just a me. But if I insisted on being just a me, then when God reveals himself and the whole world sees that God is one, I'm going to be looking and I'm not going to see myself. I'm not going to be there. Because I wasn't involved in the Gilui HaYichud with my life. So, how much do you want it to be part of it? If you want to be part of it, you have to give up the me. But you're not getting lost. You're not losing. You're giving up the me for the we. So I think that Hashem provided marriage just as a paradigm. Now again, if you get this, theoretically, you could have this without being married. If you get the concept, it is just a trick. A way that God teaches man, tricks us, like one of the rabbis said in the yeshiva, he said, marriage is a way of tricking us into being less selfish. That's what marriage is. It's a way of tricking us into being less selfish. Now, if we understand that, we can become less selfish on our own. We really can. We can be a builder on our own. We could be someone who's responsible on our own. We could be somebody who is godly on our own. Marriage is just a way of tricking us into being less selfish. The goal is Gilui HaYichud. Revealing the oneness. I think that's it. I think that's really it. I think everything is contained herein.
What are you going to do for the rest of the year?
Well, first of all, let's find out if there's more, because there may be unanswered questions. I got to this point with Hashem's help because I was thinking of questions. Like, we got to the point where we're told that we're supposed to serve Hashem so that we can get rewarded in Olam Haba. So then I said, well then, what's this all about revealing God? And then it says, everything that was created in the world is for God's glory. Well, I had a question. It didn't make sense with what I was told, that I'm supposed to be here to receive reward in Olam Haba. It didn't compute. Right? And then when I learned that, no, we're supposed to be Megala the Yichud, then I said, well then how come I have to develop myself? What's that got to do with Gilui HaYichud? Why don't I just stand here and say Shema Yisrael all day long? And that drove me to think that maybe we have to be Megala the Yichud through our own actions. We have to become God-like. So, let's see if there's any other questions. I don't know. Maybe we're going to have some difficulties. The other thing we have to do is we have to continue on in the basics in finding out what are the other components of this. For example, I mentioned at the end of last week, and then I'll close, but remember we asked the question at the end of last week, okay, so it's God and man. So who is this man? Remember? We asked the question, who is this man? Is it me? Is it you? Is it you? Is it each one of us individually? And the answer was no. This man is Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people. We're the man. How can we be a man? And then, if the we is Klal Yisrael, then what is the value of each individual person? That gets into a whole other discussion about the role of the individual and the community. So I think we have more basics to talk about there. Something about being a part of the Gilui HaYichud. My own personal little part in the play. I'm not the main character. We're all the main character. But I play a small role in that, and I have to define my role. So let's talk about that too, because that's part of it. But I think that this now incorporates a fuller, more comprehensive understanding of what does it mean, man and God. Now we remember at the beginning of the Chumash, we noted that the result of the sin of Adam was that Adam felt very disconnected with God. He didn't feel that he was actually one with him. He was actually like arguing with him, and he was hiding, and he was feeling very detached, and he was feeling ashamed. And so everything that we're saying is all well and good, but we know that it's not that simple. We know that it's not simple just to say, oh sure, we're going to be Megala the Yichud, we're going to reveal the oneness. Baloney. In fact, if you will allow me, I forgot an important point. And then, I'm sorry, I'll get to you. But here's a very important point. And this will bring up some of the challenges here. There are people in the world who stand up on that soapbox and they say, I am L'shem Shamayim. Everything that I am doing is for the sake of heaven. It's not for myself. I'm telling you brothers and sisters, what I am proposing, what I am saying is for the sake of heaven. Stay away from those people. That's how jihad gets started. Mm-hmm. I'm serious. Okay? Another scenario. A person is trying or says that they want a certain thing in life. They want to get married. They want to get a job. They want to have respect. Something. They want to accomplish something. And maybe they are seeking guidance, maybe they're not. So they kind of amble along, try to accomplish what it is that they're trying to accomplish, and they don't really succeed. They fall down. And then they get up and they say, well, I guess it's God's will. But I shouldn't succeed. I guess it's God's will. Now, tell me. Scenario one. A person who's saying that he's doing l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, not for his own personal reasons. Or the person who says, I'm not successful because God doesn't want me to be. Are those two people megala hayichud? Are they involved in revealing the oneness or not?
No.
Why?
Because it's all about them. One on the soapbox, I am only doing this for it's I. And the other one is also not my fault. I wanted this success, but I didn't get it. So it sounds like it's all for them.
Well, okay. All right. That could be. That could be that you can tell from the wording that they use.
But sometimes I do say that.
Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to have this because Hashem didn't want me to have it.
Yeah.
So that sounds like...
This is where basics turns into real nitty-gritty. How do you know? How do you know when? So that maybe we'll explore another time. But what I think what we want to show is that it's not only what you say. It's what you do. So, if the first person is really l'shem shamayim, then maybe he's shouldn't be talking. Maybe he's destroying things. Maybe he's ostracizing people. Maybe if he's really l'shem shamayim, maybe he should shut up. Or if that person is not successful, maybe he's doing something wrong. Maybe he's not taking responsibility. Maybe he's not seeking guidance. Maybe he's being lazy. And he's saying that it was God's will that he shouldn't succeed, when really, it's not what you say. It's, are you being megala hayichud with your actions? Are you developing your tzelem Elokim? Now, if you have a teacher or you have somebody that's giving you guidance and says, you know, I know you. You did everything you possibly could. And it still didn't work. That's when you can say it was God's will. But who are we to decide, especially on our own, especially when we're so, you know, taken by laziness and being set in our ways? Who are us to say it was God's will? Baloney, God says. It's not my will. It's your lack of will. Right? So... That's where it becomes fuzzy. That's where basics now turns into the real drama. You know? That's when you have to say, if this is the way the system works, ooh, wow, now I have to start playing. I need help. How do I know? That's why we need a teacher. That's why we need a rabbi. You know? So there's plenty more where this comes from. This is just the dictionary definition, if you will, of what the challenge is. So, I think this is enough for today. I think we'll have something to continue on next week. But thank you for listening, and please let me know if you have any questions that are not answered by this, because we need to develop this further. We need to get the basics. But I think this is basic. This is basic of what is this the basics of? Not the basics of faith, not the basics of mitzvahs. This is the basics of
life.
Torah reality, which is life. Torah reality. Okay.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.